This is your tech news briefing for Wednesday, November 18th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. As coronavirus case counts continue to rise and a vaccine is still months away from wide distribution, experts say contact tracing technology could help slow the spread of the virus. Several states, plus DC, have begun using technology from Apple and Google to help with this, and many more are in the pipeline. But the technology is only helpful if people actually use it. And as of yet, not many people are. Our reporter Rolf Winkler will join us to explain why that is after these headlines. Amazon says customers can now buy prescription medications through a new store on its platform called Amazon Pharmacy. The move expands the e-commerce giant's presence in healthcare and comes about 2 years after Amazon acquired the online pharmacy PillPack. An Amazon executive said pharmacy was an important addition as more people look to complete everyday errands from home in the pandemic. Shares of drugstore companies, including CVS, Walgreens, and Rite Aid, fell on the news. Twitter launched a new feature called Fleets yesterday. The feature is for your fleeting thoughts. It lets you post text, audio, and video that disappears after 24 hours. That might sound familiar. Several other social media platforms have similar offerings. Twitter executives say the new feature is designed to increase engagement after the company found that some users are too intimidated to post and join conversations. Speaking of Twitter, its CEO, Jack Dorsey, appeared before the Senate Judiciary Committee yesterday alongside Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg. The committee had called the social media leaders to testify about how they moderate election-related and other types of content. Here's our reporter Ryan Tracy with a recap.
Republicans on the Senate Judiciary Committee have been pushing for this hearing since before the election. In particular, they were very angry at Twitter and Facebook for taking action against a news story involving Joe Biden and his son Hunter. The Biden campaign disputed that story, but there was nevertheless some actions by social media companies to prevent the spread of that story online. And that was the catalyst that led this committee to subpoena the CEOs and to get them before them. And we certainly saw that in the questions. You know, we saw Republicans bring up their concerns about censorship of conservative voices online. We saw, of course, unsurprisingly, the executives pushing back a lot on that. And we saw Democrats kind of raising their own partisan issues. There was one point where Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut said that he's really concerned that some of the limitations that the platforms have imposed around political ads could potentially affect a runoff election in Georgia that could decide who controls the U.S. Senate. And so, you know, we saw both parties coming at this from different perspectives, which was no surprise.
Both Dorsey and Zuckerberg told lawmakers that they did better at fending off election interference in 2020 than they did in 2016. They also acknowledged some mistakes and signaled an openness to more regulation, which could be coming. Here's Ryan again.
Well, the questions were tough, as they have been when they appear virtually or in person before congressional committees. There's been a lot of anger on both sides of the aisle, and I think one fair takeaway from this hearing is that we're likely to see these debates continue, the focus on these companies continue, and that these companies are really facing, you know, a risk of some pretty draconian rules coming out of Washington, potentially. Now, the counterpoint to that is it's really hard to pass laws, and Congress may never agree on what to do, and so that means the law would stay the same.
And finally, last night, President Trump fired the top cybersecurity official at the Department of Homeland Security, Chris Krebs. Krebs oversaw efforts to safeguard the presidential election from foreign interference. And in recent days, he's been pushing back against President Trump's claims about voter fraud and hacks of voting systems. We report that Krebs told associates in recent weeks that he expected to be fired. All right, coming up after the break, COVID tracking technology could help keep the coronavirus at bay. So why aren't more people using it? We'll talk about that next. Contact tracing could help slow the spread of the coronavirus by helping you figure out when you've been in contact with someone who's tested positive, which lets you know when you should take steps to quarantine yourself. Tech companies have been working to automate parts of the contact tracing process. Both Apple and Google have built exposure notification technology into their smartphone operating systems. It's been adopted by 15 states plus Washington, D.C., and more are set to follow. But this kind of tech only works if people use it, and many who have access in the U.S. are not doing so. Our reporter Rolf Winkler has been looking into why that is, and he joins me now to discuss. Rolf, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Amanda.
Okay, so to start out, let's talk about the technology itself. How does this tech from Apple and Google actually work?
The way they work is with Bluetooth. So it's the same thing on your phone that connects to wireless headphones. So imagine you're sitting next to somebody on a bench. You both have phones. What Apple and Google do is they make your phone basically send out a ping, a random ID number, so that your phones are pinging each other with these random ID numbers, basically registering that these two have been in close proximity to one another. Now, here's where the tricky part happens. Those little random ID numbers, which change frequently so that you can stay anonymous. It's not like every person has one ID number that can be traced back to them. It changes every 15 minutes. Those numbers stay on your phone. So my phone keeps a record of all those ID numbers that have been pinging me. It doesn't go anywhere else. It doesn't go up to the cloud. Doesn't go to the government. Doesn't go to Apple or Google. What happens is if that person tests positive, he'll then upload a set of keys, not the numbers that he's been broadcasting, that goes to the cloud, that then gets downloaded by everybody else's phone and then unlocks all the numbers that were on their phone, right? That then creates a notification on my phone. Hey, you've been in contact with someone. Go get a test. Now, the next question is, why is it so complicated? By design, because all that complexity means it protects everybody in the system, means they're anonymous. It means the public health authorities, nobody knows who's getting an exposure notification on their phone or where they are.
So several places in the U.S. have already adopted these technologies. Are they effective?
That's a great question. All of that complexity that keeps everything private, that keeps it private, but it also means the government doesn't have data. So they don't really know how many people are getting these notifications or if it's slowing the spread. There is one paper out of Switzerland. That technology has been in Europe for a while. And the folks in Switzerland, what they're able to see is there's a phone number that the app generates. You'll call this number when you get a notification that you could have been exposed. So if they get a call on that number, they know people are getting exposure notifications. So they can at least, they don't know who's exposing who, but in their case, they can see, well, at least it's working. People are calling the number. And they did some survey work and they had a few dozen people who tested positive say, yes, the reason I went and got a test was because I got this notification in my phone. That data suggests it can work. Now, the hard part is the testing system has to be in order. And crucially, people have to download and use it.
Yeah, let's talk more about that. It sounds like that's been a really big issue, getting people to actually opt in and use this tech. Why is that?
A few reasons. One is people are distrustful. They reflexively worry about the government tracking them. And again, like I said, these apps are designed not to be able to track you. There are other people who just don't know. They just don't have any idea about these apps because some states are promoting them via commercials, or maybe you'll see a billboard, but you know, necessarily not everybody's driving down the highway, sees that billboard, understands what it is, and then remembers to go to their phone to turn this on.
And you know, we also know that the virus itself has been politicized. Does that play a role here?
Yeah, I think so. Hard to get a hard and fast data on that, but it was very interesting when you surf Facebook, for instance, in the state of Virginia where I was looking closely. There were two different Facebook groups. One, Arlington County Friends Address COVID. They had a COVID group in Arlington County up near DC, very Democratic leaning area. There's another group for the citizens of Montpelier, which is in Hanover County. That's a very Republican leaning area. What's interesting about these two groups is both of them in early August, when Virginia made this app available, had a post that said, hey, this app is available. What do you guys think about it? The folks in the Arlington County group, generally, I mean, the comments were, this looks really interesting, doesn't invade privacy, you should use this. The folks in the Montpelier group were the polar opposite. No way, not going to go anywhere near it, don't want to be tracked. So it very much mirrors kind of what people feel about masks. So red areas are maybe more skittish of masks and also this app than are blue areas.
And just for a sense of scale, what do adoption rates actually look like right now?
Well, for instance, in Virginia, I believe there are around 750 or 800,000 people in the state, which, you know, as a percentage of people with smartphones, it's up around 15%. But if as a percentage of the whole state, it's probably 10% or so, which if you think about, if 10% of people have the app, then only 1% of close contacts actually are going to be logged proximity, because there's a 10% chance that I have the app and the guy behind me on the bench has the app. 10% times 10% is 1%. So there's a 1% chance that both of us in close proximity will both have it. We'll be pinging each other with Bluetooth to register the exposure.
Now, this technology is only available in 15 states so far, mostly in the Northeast, but these apps are set to be rolled out in more locations soon. Do Apple and Google have plans to sort of address some of these shortcomings, particularly that issue of adoption?
They're making it possible for states to send push alerts. There's a new version of this technology that came out in the last couple months that doesn't require you to download an app if you're on an iPhone. Basically, it's built into the operating system and you can just turn it on. And in conjunction with that, Apple and also Google on Android phones is actually enabling states to send, like I said, a push alert so that you can actually say, hey, do you want to turn on exposure notifications on your phone? Click here. And then it's done. That's different than seeing a billboard go into your phone, turning it on. So for instance, in DC, when they turned it on, there was, I believe, 200,000 people, about 15% of the city had turned it on inside of 3 days. Now, it doesn't continue to grow that quickly. I think they're up around 20% now, but that's after a couple weeks. And Virginia's had this app out. They were the first state. They've had it out since early August. You know, DC had higher adoption in 3 days than Virginia had in 3 months. That is the main change that has come. The other thing is some states, you know, try to actively promote it. The governors will talk about it. They'll run commercials. They'll do billboards. It's helpful, but they would probably have to be even more aggressive about trying to get people to download it to have a huge impact with normal marketing channels. And then the hard part is they don't want to compel use of the app, because if they compel it, if they say you have to download it, then the problem will be they feel like they'll fan fears about, well, the government is tracking me. And they really want to emphasize that this is voluntary. They really, really hope everybody will download it, but they also don't want to cross the line of making it mandatory.
All right, our reporter Rolf Winkler, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Amanda.
That's it for today's tech news briefing. You can find more tech stories on our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us in your app store. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.